it's about that time. Time to fill the grill with all your ShopRite favorites, like hot dogs and hamburgers, sausages and shrimp. So go ahead, fill the grill at a fabulous price. See all our summer deals at ShopRite.com. ShopRite. Check out happy.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Taxes. Not only taxes in the United States, not only the IRS, but global taxes. In the news, because Janet Yellen and the G7 finance ministers have been discussing global taxes in several iterations, and the G7 itself meeting in Europe, in Great Britain, discussing a minimum tax. That's one of the presentations by the finance ministers. I welcome Richard Epstein. Professor Richard Epstein teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. And I learned that Richard's been writing about taxes for 50 years. So pending Edmund Burke showing up, Richard will do for an overall view of how we've gone through several administrations, always making tax adjustments that are then adjusted again. Richard is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Richard, a very good evening to you. The presentation by the finance ministers of G7, finance ministers, including Janet Yellen, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, now Secretary of the Treasury, is three parts to my reading, and I go quickly through: one, a tax rate on the 100 largest multinationals on earth. That is not a named list, but we can guess at some of them. Two, a minimum tax, global minimum tax on corporations. And three, a digital tax on companies, corporations, multinationals that do business in a country without a presence in the country. Google would be an example, advertising. I want to start with the global minimum tax because that has come up again in headlines from the G7 meeting.
Yes.
It's 15% is the number they're using, but as I understand it, there are countries higher, there are countries lower. So what is your understanding of their ambition for a global minimum tax? Good evening to you, Richard.
Well, I think you're very wise to start with the ambition rather than to start with the number, because the number is going to be heavily contingent upon what the tax base is and how it's going to be computed in different countries, and the comparabilities are not easy to achieve. But the objective here is, I think, one that's quite clear. The basic dominant mood that we have today is progressive rather than classical liberal and conservative. The classical liberal conservative, like myself, believes that exit rights are an extremely important protection against government oppression. It's not that it's perfect. You can't take your land with you, for example, if the government decides to tax real estate and so forth. But what it does mean is that assets that are mobile can constantly seep a home somewhere else in which the tax rates are going to be the lowest. This means that governments are going to be unable to exact huge sums from firms above and beyond the cost of providing them with services that they need in order to flourish.
That's what exit rights are. You have the the power to vote with your feet and leave the sovereignty.
Yes. And for example, the United States is a federalist system. Exit rights are an extremely important form of containing various kinds of abuses that are put into places by the state. If you don't like what's happening to your business in California, you could march right off to Texas and open up the business there. This is not small potatoes. You're talking about billions upon billions of dollars and hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people who move these ways. The simplest way to do this is to check the electoral votes of different states and compare them over a 50-year period, and you'll see California rises and then starts to stumble. Texas rises and continues to rise. Same with Florida. New York and Illinois are both basket cases, and what you're seeing is high tax regimes are losing elsewhere. That exact same phenomenon will start to happen in the international market, and the president of the United States basically wants to have a huge tax and transfer system, and he recognizes that capital will flee the borders. That is not only foreign capital that doesn't come in, it's American capital that goes out, it's foreign capital that starts to retrench and so forth, and so what they have to do is to reduce the exit rate. And the way they start to do that is they force their rivals to raise the taxes so that essentially if you leave, you don't get that particular advantage. Their argument that it creates a kind of a tax parity, but it's exactly the thing that we don't want to create, because tax parity is essentially a uniform set of prices which has all the earmarks of a cartel arrangement. Cartels, when they're put together by private parties, are known to be highly inefficient because of the ways in which they manage to raise prices, reduce output, and stifle innovation. And that's exactly the same thing that happens when the cartel organizes. It turns out to be a government. And so what you see is the sort of progressive instincts, we can manage the economy, taking place in the United States. They realize that the exit threat is very credible, and so what they're trying to do is to go international with it. I wish them all the ill will in the world in terms of their general political situation. I hope they enjoy the amenities that are associated with being in the United Kingdom, but this is not the time in which we want to do that sort of thing. The loss of prosperity in the world from innovation will be enormous. Essentially, every time you engage in a transfer tax, the pie starts to shrink and people have to fight over it. Every time you engage in productivity gains, the pie expands and people can each enjoy their pro rata share, more or less, of the gains in question. So they're moving in exactly the wrong direction. And what we really need to do is take a very emphatic step and to hope that this particular scheme dies stillborn before it gets enacted into any kind of an agreement. I might add, if it were to come back to the United States in the form of a treaty, the Senate would be right to reject it.
Richard, I pause because the G7 is also the G10, is also the G20. And at some point, China and Russia get involved. So on one side, I'd say enforcement. On the other side, we have low-tax states. I believe Romania's one, Ireland's one, Grenada's one. Let's take the low-tax states first. Why wouldn't people flee to those? And if they did, what authority does the G7, anyone, have to enforce on a sovereign state what it must and must not do with its clients?
My God, this turns out to be an utter can of worms. It's an extremely difficult question because what happens is, suppose you locate your business in a state like Ireland, which is low tax. There's going to be the enormous question of how much of the revenue that you start to get in Ireland, which is from the back, really is revenue that was earned in another country, which may have a higher tax base. And that rate should not be reduced because the money has been transferred out in some kind of a transaction. This doesn't get you global taxes. The correct approach in many cases is to say if you're making a lot of money in Germany, and Germany is a high tax state, you're stuck with German rates. But if, in fact, you make the money somewhere else, you're not. What makes this extremely difficult is sometimes it's very difficult when you're talking about the overall profits of a business associated, for example, with its worldwide advertisement and brand strength to figure out where it is that you localize these particular gains. It's just not a unique kind of easy situation to do. What you can do is you could figure out, for the most part, where the revenues come from, but it's very difficult when you have joint costs to figure out where it is that these costs are allocated. So there is that kind of a problem that has to be dealt with. This long predates this particular issue, and Ireland has in fact been attacked for being essentially a low-tax state which siphons profits off that are earned somewhere else. The United States has generally backed it because these are American companies, and they did not, at least at the time, want them to be taxed by high-tax European countries. And now, under the Biden administration, we're not sure whether that's going to continue or whether it's going to trade. But let me just put it in the simplest way. You try to understand the way the system of international taxes work, given the fact that you have both bona fide business transactions on the one hand and fake transactions moving money back and forth borders on the other hand. It's a nightmare prior to this situation. What will happen is, whatever the difficulties are, you throw in some kind of a maximum, minimum, whatever kind of tax you want to put on a worldwide basis. It's only going to make these things even more difficult, which will reduce the efficiency of commerce. And I might add, it's not just taxations that we have to worry about. There's also now going on a fairly strong effort to try to coordinate the antitrust implications, and that's extremely important because those are going to be targeted against very large corporations, often independent of their market power. And I think that kind of ties in with, if I'm not mistaken, the second thing that you've put on your agenda, which is what are you supposed to do with the 100 largest corporations?
Yes, let's come to that. And the one that comes to mind immediately is the China corporations. Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and University of Chicago. We're discussing global taxes, meaning they're coming to an idea near you about your local taxes. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
It's about that time. Time to fill the grill with all your ShopRite favorites, like hot dogs and hamburgers, sausages and shrimp. So go ahead, fill the grill at a fabulous price. See all our summer deals at ShopRite.com. ShopRite. Check out happy.
Stoned.
Fried. Baked.
Faded.
Wasted.
High.
Behind the wheel, it all means impaired. Driving high equals DUI. Don't drive high. A message from the Connecticut Department of Transportation.